Welcome to AB Testing Podcast, your modern testing podcast. Your hosts, Alan and Brent, will be here to guide you through topics on testing, leadership, agile, and anything else that comes to mind. Now, on with the show.
Welcome back to the AB Testing Podcast. I'm still Alan.
I'm Brent.
And it's episode 201, the Aftermath Edition.
Yes, and my actual 200.
Yeah, because Brent skipped one. And I've done a lot more than 200 if you count the 343s. But anyway.
Which I do.
If you have caught up in our podcast, you know that our last episode, like a year ago, 3 weeks ago, was our 200th episode. I don't think we planned on taking this long of a time off, but stuff, life happens. You know, we have life and stuff happens and then we don't record for a while, but we're recording again.
Yay.
And I have some ideas about recording that I wanted to share with you. But first of all, how's it going? What's new in your world that you're allowed to share under a non-NDA agreement?
springtime.
We call it fifth winter in Seattle.
Yeah, I know. I can now tell you what exactly 12 yards of dirt looks like.
Big pile of dirt.
It is.
Looks like a big pile of dirt.
It does. 12 yards of it. Like, I don't know if you... So I've
heard... I see. the cat, who is now a regular on the Brent side of the podcast, is batting Brent in the arm for refusing to pet him enough.
It's her. This is
her. Sorry.
This is Scruffy. And yeah, she's like, you've left me alone at home all day long.
I apologize for getting your pronouns wrong. All right.
Yeah. she can't hear you, but I'm sure she accepts it.
Cool.
I think that if I ignore her, she'll ignore me.
All right. Were you in the middle of answering a question or just kind of hanging out?
Yeah, I'm busily nuking my yard. I am now tired of getting a free vibration massage just by mowing the lawn. So I've got a bunch of dirt, leveling it out. And we'll go from there.
Cool. We have a lawn about half the size of my office here, so I mow it with a push mower in about 5 minutes.
Nice.
No vibration needed. Hey, so I had an idea and I hadn't told you about it and it's already kind of wrecked, but I think I can salvage it.
Okay.
And this is behind the scenes of A/B testing. It's not an idea for you. Those of you that pay close attention to the A/B testing podcast know that Brent shows up and then we record and then I do all the editing and get you the wonderful podcast that you hear. Now, it usually takes me about 150 to 200% of the podcast length to edit. And because I go through and I do a couple things. I get rid of Brent coughing in the background, just happened a minute ago, if I don't get that out of there. When Brent decides to type in the middle of when I'm talking, I get that out of there. And then also I do both of us get rid of some of the filler words that we use. I could actually, what's funny here is I could probably replicate all of Brent's filler words if I want. I may do that for fun sometime because they're pretty consistent. They're pretty consistent. But anyway, I sometimes when we talk over each other, it's good in the moment, but I'll shift things around. I'll actually shift things around so we're not sounds like a conversation and not the cacophony that we usually generate and try to make it sound pretty good. And of course, I'll always do all the tweaking on audio levels and settings, etc. But and I've been doing that for 200 episodes, which is fine. I'll drink wine while I do it. I can't like watch a TV show because like, I have to listen to one set of audio at a time, but it's fine. Not complaining. But after 200, I wanted to get 200 recorded and get it out. So I spent a grand total of about 10 minutes at most editing. Record. And I just yanked out all of the places where Brent was typing or coughing or breathing heavily into the microphone. I usually spot those things visually and go silence those in a second.
You shouldn't have been dealing with the breathing thing for a while because I no longer use this mic.
No, it still shows up sometimes. It depends. So anyway, I'm going to do an experiment. So here's what I need. Brent, you won't notice, but for the listeners, I am going to spend remarkably less time editing this podcast and maybe the next one till we get some feedback. I'm still going to get the levels and the audio as good as I can and get everything in there. Oh, you know what? I was dumb. I should have played. Usually when I edit, then I go in and add the intro. I should just start doing that live from now on and give me one damn less thing to do. I blew it. Next time I'll get that. But I'm going to make an experiment. See if a few more filler words. Don't take too much away from the podcast. I'll see if I can time box that edit to 15 or less and see what happens. Anyway, that was my revelation after doing 200. And let me know. I'm happy if people come and say, you know what, Alan, when you don't edit, you two sound like a couple of dumb shits. Then I'll go back and make us sound less dumb shitty. Because that's the time. I just want to make sure, I'm spending time to make sure we sound a little bit smarter than we actually are. Both of us. All right. Brant has given me, for the first time ever, he has given me two fingers up, and the fingers are thumbs this time, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, I'm finding that if I, for the most part, just stay on mute, then I'm not going to get in trouble. Given this new rules.
So before you were like, well, fuck it. I'll just get in. Now I have to go edit that. Damn it. I don't know what to do. Nobody will notice. Who's going to report me, right? What happens if I don't put the explicit tag on and I say that again? I'll leave it in there once. Maybe it's like PG where I can get away with it once as long as I don't repeat. I don't know. Oh. Anyway, do you want to? Oh, there's an O. Go ahead.
Oh. I've been thinking about this all week, so I'll wait for you.
No, I'm done. Tell me what you're thinking about.
I will tell you something that we haven't talked about. I am hoping you already know about this, but I'm kind of hoping you don't.
Okay. That HashiCorp was bought by IBM?
No.
Okay, because that sucks. Anyway, go on.
Amazon Prime.
Yes.
Fallout.
I already watched the whole series in one day.
Did you? I wasn't able to. But
one weekend.
Oh my God, was that good?
Yes, it was. Dude, I even talked about it last week. Not today, but a week ago on my Five for Friday.
Oh, okay.
Because it's so my wife started watching it. And she says, hey, I've been watching Fallout. It's really good. I said, hold the F on.
You've been watching
Fallout 4, favorite video game always. She goes, oh, is it based on a video game? Let me step back from the mic for a little bit. So I said, would you like to stop while I catch up?
You just don't pay attention to me in my life.
Would you like to stop while I catch up or shall we start over? And we started over.
Okay.
We watched from the beginning. And it's like, it is, of course, in the Fallout world, but not the storyline. So I get a lot of questions of, is that in the game? Is that in the game? Or me saying, that's in the game. Like when they go to Red Rock, I'm not going to give any spoilers away because the series is great. It's a story in the Fallout world with just enough total scene steals from the game, from Fallout 4. Probably for some other Fallouts too, but Fallout 4 really pops up there a lot. That it's just like, oh my God, that's so cool. Like the Red Rocket Diner, which is going to bring up a minute ago. The armor and the armor and like the armor stations where you work on the armor. It's like they are perfect.
Yeah. Perfect. And I was reading an article. Bethesda gave them no requirements on the power armor. They could have done whatever they wanted to, and they decided to keep it. Like legit. And I'm like, Awesome. That's what you should have done. That's what you did do. That's fantastic. A couple of things that I learned after.
All right. Still early enough. Now, no spoilers.
So apparently the series that is, I didn't realize this, but it's 100 years after Fallout New Vegas. Okay. Throughout the entire show, I'm like, the hell? What are they talking about? Right? And it's 100 years after. Okay? There's only one thing that I caught that I'm like, yeah, that's not how it happens in the game. I won't necessarily bring it up here. But it is really good. We get Dog Meat's backstory. That might have been a spoiler there, but Dog Meat is one of my favorite characters in the entire series.
It was great to see him.
I'm like, Doug, it's her. Damn you and your pronouns today with the animals.
I didn't check the gender in the game.
They mentioned she's a she in the show.
I've forgotten.
But I'm like, Doug Meat, yay!
See, that's what I'm saying. Pronouns mean nothing to me, I guess. Maybe that's bad. Never mind. Got him.
And the thing that got me, like, just stupid 12-year-old giggly was the very first episode, and a guy dies by being, that might be a spoiler, but the junk jet. I'm like, that's a junk jet. Oh my God.
You know what else is cool is, and again, no spoilers, but the Pip Boy, when you go near radiation, the exact same sound as the game.
Yeah. I noticed that too. I'm like, well, I don't have in the game. I just get the clicking noise. Yeah. Anyway.
You know, really well done. Like I said, it's a whole new story, so it's totally accessible for somebody who's never played the game, but also a lot of fun for those of us that has. And I don't know if you know this, Amazon made the streaming versions of a lot of the Fallout games free going along with the series, so they could. A lot of people have been playing those.
I didn't know they had one.
Yeah.
Streaming.
Wake up, man! Wake up! We got a podcast to do. Yeah. So yes, the year. But you mentioned that the Fallout series is like 100 years after Fallout New Vegas. Isn't Fallout 4 just like basically right after New Vegas? So isn't it really like 100 years after Fallout 4 as well? Or is Fallout 4 later?
I don't know the timeline.
And then Fallout 76 was based way earlier in the thing. Like in, but probably not in any 76, 2076. I don't know how it works out. 2176.
It was 200 years after.
Everybody's bored of our podcast.
Hey,
everybody. Shall we actually talk about A, B testing? No, none of that stuff. Do you want to do anything else before we do the thing?
Hold up.
Maybe.
All right. All Fallout games in chronological order. So 76 is first.
Right.
And that was in the 2100s, early 2100s. Fallout.
Okay.
Okay. Then Fallout 1, which I played.
Did not play.
2161. Fallout Tactics, which I did not play.
Me neither.
Fallout Brotherhood of that was 2197. Fallout Brotherhood of Steel, I did play, 2208.
I didn't do that one either.
Fallout 2, 2241, I played.
Did not.
Fallout 3, 22,
played that.
2277.
Then New Vegas is
New Vegas, right? Is 2281.
Played that.
2281 and 4 is 2287.
Okay, so I'll basically right after.
Yeah, those two were close enough. So, so even this series is like 100 after, right? And Fallout New Vegas, like the NRC is a big deal there, and it's also a big deal in the series.
Wait, what year is Fallout 4?
2287.
And when is the series? 2387?
2380? The site I'm looking at doesn't state.
Okay.
But there again, there was another article I read that said the series is around 100 years after New Vegas.
All right. I'll figure it out.
And
okay, then.
Yeah.
Okay, then. Now that everyone is bored, and I did get to write a new song, so that's good. Why don't we just bring it back to something we haven't done in a long time? Let's go old school. You ready to go old school, Brent?
I am.
Let's kick it off with
Mailbag. Oh, that was
that's way better. That's in the old days.
That's not old school. That's just old school.
In the old days go like this. I say Mailbag, and then I go in post. I would go edit and add the audio in there. Now it's live because I know how to do that now. Thank you, Riverside FM. We got a couple mailbag questions, and the way you get into our mailbag is you send a self-addressed stamped envelope to – no, you don't because that's stupid. You actually fax something. No, that's dumber. What you do is you join our Slack community. You can get an invite by going to moderntesting.org and finding the stupid link. Click on that. You can join our Slack, one of the 3.slack.com. Over 1,000 members and climbing. What? Yeah, it is. Yeah, we've had more people join since last time. And you can go to the mailbag channel, or all you have to do is ask a question somewhere. And then if I or somebody says that's a good mailbag question, you can add the mailbag reaction to a message, and bam, it shows up in the mailbag channel. And that's how we roll, because we're cool and we do automated stuff.
Because I am, because lazier is better.
Okay, you know what's not lazy? Me reading a 4-paragraph question for you. That's what's not. Hey, by the way, I love all of our listeners, but man, shorter questions, all right? God, what do you think I am? Just teasing. This came from Sean Curtis. Thank you very much for the question. I just moved from a software agency housing 25 employees and 14 natural projects, so small company, over to a large organization of hundreds of people and a few dozen services, which all tie in together. Okay, stuff's getting bigger. In my first week, I've heard a lot of developers who are stuck in not my problem mentality, which is very damaging to the products and the organization itself. True. As part of my onboarding, I kind of expected some level of documentation on the services I will be testing, but that's not even remotely a thing here. Been there. With the rise of AI, I'm wondering if there could be an Azure solution, because they use Azure tools, to analyze all of the repos and produce a context diagram based on the current state of committed works, or is that too ambitious? I guess the underlying question here is, would there be added risks with a QA engineer writing the documentation based on the developed solution outside of capturing developer influence? So, I want to answer all this. I'm going to let you answer first, like the easy question, which is, can we have AI analyze the repos and produce a context diagram based on the current state of committed works? And I'll elaborate on some answers for the second one. Brent, you're up. Can we do that? Could AI do that?
I'm trying to recall. Is context diagram an actual formal thing?
Well, I don't know. But I don't know. And I'm going to answer for you if you don't get to it.
Yeah, it can generate it for sure. Whether that's it's useful or does anything good is a separate question.
Well, it's talking about documentation. And maybe I'll do the second one first, because I think this is actually a really good question and something maybe more companies should do. Because I remember, and I'm sure you did this back in the day when we were in test, I remember having no documentation for something I was testing, no spec for it. As a result of testing it, I would write up a diagram, not a diagram, I would write up a document saying, this is how this thing works and what it does. And, maybe not totally in depth, but a pretty good deep document describing what the thing was I was testing did, how it worked and all that. And I would give it to our program managers and say, here's a document describing what we're building. Is it right? And they go, works for me. So we're just asking AI to do that for us, which I think it actually do a better job at.
Right. That is absolutely possible today. It's probably going to take more time to get the AI to do something useful with the right. He talks about repos there, like GPT has a token limit. You can't just like point it at a repo and say, document this, right? You have to write code on top of it. But yeah, it certainly could do something there. With some creativity, with some thought, you could have it do something smart there.
But you could have it.
I guess like my bigger question, though, before letting you finish your question is, okay, but what's the point? Right? If you're going to have it sit there writing the documentation, to me it feels like the time would be better spent having it write documented test cases. And here I don't mean like documented in a test case manager. I mean like automated test cases with useful comments as to why those are there.
Okay. So I'm doing the Brent. I'm actually, our roles are reversed. Brent's being sensible and I'm trying something out. So my hypothesis is that, and I know it can do this because I've done it before, is to ask ChatGPT or Copilot what this code does. And, or even, you know, make an API documentation for this code or whatever. And it would do pretty well.
Yeah, it will.
And I imagine you could do it on large sets. It would actually be pretty doable. What I have just done, and I have ChatGPT-4 thinking hard because it's typing very slowly its answer. But what I did, and you can do this on your own because I'm not sharing my screen, is I took last year's winter. This is why I edit. This is cold. Cold, hard, uncut, just like your roast ham. I copied and pasted last year's winner of the Obfuscated Sea contest. You familiar with this? For those of you who are not, this is right, perfectly functional yet impossible to read code and see. And I pasted it into ChatGPT and said, what does this code do? And it is slowly telling me. It's really having a hard time, but it's getting there. We don't have time to wait for it, but it actually tells me enough in what's here. It actually did pretty well. Not great. All right. That's a bad one. This is a bad example, but what they've done in this case is rather than put it in one file, they have made the worst make file in all history to actually identify some of the macros in there, which makes this absolutely impossible to figure out. It would take some time to train ChatGPT. Anyway, the point, those of you that haven't turned off the podcast yet, the point is that I think, yes, the answer is yes. We took a very long time to say, yes, you can use AI to help in this scenario.
I did something myself, sharing screen, because I think it's funny.
Great. This is great for podcasting.
Yeah, absolutely. So I took, I asked, what did this do? By the way, I found a code example for doing a Morse code converter, right? Very, okay. Very little code. I pasted it into the Bing bot. And as Alan will validate, that broke it.
It is typing. The 2016 Olympic Games are not yet in the public domain over and over and over. You completely broke it.
Right. And it started off with a bunch of dots, then random numbers. And I'm like,
that is excellent.
Wow.
You really, really broke it.
And now, because I spent a lot of my time with LLM, I'm like, how did I get there from here?
Yes.
Like, anyway, yeah. I'll let you know.
You had to have shot, I don't know what you did, but that is cooler than crap.
No, you see my prompt. I just said, what does this do when I gave it code?
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I see it. I see it. It's
And normally it works. I have, like, I've given it SQL code. I've given it.
And so let me get back on topic for this question. Yeah. And I want to, again, I hypothesize on stuff because you know more, way more about this stuff than I do. But I think asking code what it, giving ChatGPT code in general and asking it what it does is probably going to give you more useful information in having it write tests, more useful information than having it write code for you. Copilot, of course, is very good at writing code, but you have to, did you lose me? Okay. I got a little wheel thing here. All right. Copilot is very good at writing code, but I don't think we're at a point where we can all trust it as much as we want to yet.
No. And while it's an AI, you should continue to not trust it. Like, I will tell you, I spend the majority of my time, anytime I do an LLM exercise, I spend the majority of my time going, okay, now how will I at scale determine if it's hallucinating? I have actually come up with a neat trick. But I got to do a little bit more polish on it, and then I'll come back and share. It's fun. I'll tell you what I am doing as a nutshell, because maybe this one's fire, folks. Everyone is using LLM right now to give us answers to things, tell us stuff, right? You know the old phrase, give a man a fish, they eat for a day, teach them the fish, they eat for a lifetime. I was like, oh. What if I get the LLM to teach me to fish? So instead of telling me the answer I'm looking for, tell me instead how to work out the answer myself. That's number one. Number two, do so in a way that ends up being machine reusable. Like I started off doing this like, I always have a prompt now of outputting this in a JSON payload, which it will do really well. If you tell it up front, like what your keys should be, it'll output it in a JSON payload. But what I'm now working through is, don't give me the answer. Give me how to figure it out myself. And I have some more specific thoughts around this one. I got to try it out. Because if I can connect it to another system known as an expert system, then I'll say this quite broadly. I will have solved the hallucination problem.
Very interesting. I think we talked about this before, but two or three five for Fridays ago, I posted a quiz somebody made, sort of an interactive LLM quiz, but the idea was had 10 questions, varying difficulty. The goal was to get the LLM to give the right answer. And in some cases it couldn't because LLMs are stupid parrots, but you could prompt it better to give the proper answer by it was a good little training on how to give better prompts. We kind of need to do, like, you're onto something there with coding. I think too many people are saying, write this code for me, or tell me how to do this, or do this algorithm. And I think there's something we could do around, and I refuse to use the word prompt engineering, phrase prompt engineering. Did you have a book? And Brent, seriously was looking at a book. I didn't even see the title of it, called Prompt Engineering for Everyone. And now I'm going to be a little sick. No, a lot sick. I'll try and hold it in.
If it gives inspiration.
Maybe, right. But I get the gist of it. And that's the title that sells.
Yeah.
Every single person I see crapping on any aspect of Gen AI and LLMs, and again, it's not a perfect science, but all the people who are air quote skeptical about it don't have a clue how they work, hence they can't give it a prompt that will help them understand if they're useful or not. And anyway, I think it applies to coding as well, even though it's an area where it actually does better than a lot of other areas, but it needs a little help sometimes. And if you're coming up with some clues around how to kind of outsmart it, make sure it gives you good answers, I dig it.
You can use it for what it is, right? But I can't. Like my team, data science team, we can't, because it's just massive onion peeling.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we ask, this is a little farther down the road, but we can ask some AI to go, not fix, but go open issues against all the bugs it finds in all of GitHub.
See, again, that's going to be, that is code plus LLM because of the token limit.
True. True. I'm thinking of, as you know, I've always been deeply involved in static analysis tools. I thought, well, wouldn't that be a flavor of static analysis? We're not asking you to find like esoteric things, but a lot of things that I guess maybe we should just run a static analysis tool against all of GitHub, be an easier use of time. So anyway, brain's just going, coming up with ideas. You know how you get good ideas, Brent?
They can. By connecting them to old ideas.
You get a lot of ideas and you throw the bad ones away.
Okay.
I'm just going to chuck that one over my shoulder. It'll land on my dog's head.
Yeah, but I'm going to tell you it's not a bad idea, actually. Because static analysis tools will give you one set of problems. LLM can actually point out runtime bugs. Right? If you do it right. So if you were to go... Let's say you segment it function by function, right? You can go to a depot and you can create a regex to parse out. Doesn't matter what language, you could parse it out. Let's go by class and break it down by method. And let's go method by method. Okay. And you'll get one set of bugs. And it'll say, I don't know what these parameters should be, right? But it'll often tell you, you should worry about, Baidai languages here or even things of that nature. Now the trick, though, is it's going to generate all of this crap that might even be more words to read than the code itself.
True.
So how do you process that at scale? And that's kind of where I'm talking about the machine reusable bit.
Yeah. I want to run something by you. We haven't talked about this before.
Yep.
I did this like a year ago. My son was in a comp sci class, and just so I could help him, I did a couple of his assignments in parallel. So if he had questions, I could say, oh, did you try this? And give him all the little hints. And one of the assignments was so hard that I asked ChatGPT to give me some help. And it actually could not solve it. At one point, it told me, you can't do it this way. Please try another method. And what I was trying to do, what I actually ended up wrote, and I don't have the code on my machine anymore. I saved it somewhere because I was so actually proud of this assignment I did for myself only. It was a small calculator app. It had to be entirely object-oriented. Absolutely no conditionals in the whole program.
No conditionals. Okay.
And by the time I got to a solution, like I was damn proud of it. Like I couldn't believe it was possible either. And my son did pretty well on it. I think I just had to help him some of the tests on it, I think. But of course, he was going to class every day where maybe he was getting some more tips, but like no conditionals. And I got stuck in a few different places and I gave ChatGPT the code I'd written already. And ChatGPT 4, and I said, I need to do this. I can't use a conditional here. How else can I do it? And it said, you can't do that. It said, you should consider writing this with conditionals. It'd be a lot easier. I said, but no. You didn't understand the assignment.
That's not what I asked.
I ended up, even with my best prompting, maybe it's smarter now and I could do better prompting, but I could not get it to help me with the parts I was stuck on. It was too hard of a problem for it. Or maybe a problem that, like, I can't say it hadn't been solved before because there's lots of object-oriented code around there, but probably not much that tries to do everything with no conditionals. Anyway, it's very interesting. I forgot about the experience. I don't know why I never brought it up before, but I think I was still fairly new. That was 6 months into the GPT world. GPT-4 was pretty much brand new at the time. And I was still in the really kicking the tire stage, which I guess I'm still in, but earlier in the tire kicking.
So immediately when you said that, I immediately thought about the commands pattern, which will get you 95% there. But I guess my question is try catch considered a conditional?
Yes, try catch is a conditional.
Oh, that makes
nice shot at a nice shot at a cheat, right?
Right. I'm like, okay.
What if I do __ asm jump? But no, it's Java virtual machine. Wouldn't let me do assembly code.
I assume a switch is a conditional.
Absolutely.
So I'm like, okay, like div by zero. Like, how would you, if someone does a division by zero?
I actually handled that, and I can't remember how. There was a way.
I'm like, okay, I can do an if. I can do a try.
I will dig up the code and share it with you. But like I said, in the end, it was super simple, and I was fairly proud of it. But again, and then my son only needed help with some of the tests that he wrote for it. So
was that high school?
College.
Okay. It's still hard. I mean, it's harder than any college like I went through.
But
now I think about it, I didn't learn my object-oriented class in college was just 3 weeks long, and it was a study of the types of software coding languages.
You know what I did? I read Thinking in C++. Head First Design Patterns and the Gang of Four book, and probably something else along the road.
I did the Thinking in C++. I did that.
Eckel, great book.
After I came back to started at Microsoft, and I actually took a course at Bellevue Community College that used that as its text.
Ah, really cool. Really cool. Yeah, I bet I faked my way through it, but that's maybe why I had so much fun with it, because I never got a chance to do it in college. So it was fun for me to kind of not pretend I was in college, but
but
to kind of fake my way through it, have some fun. It was a fun couple of evenings whipping that out.
I was frustrated in college because they didn't teach. I wanted them to have a class for C++. They only had a class for C, and I found out pretty quickly that all the cool kids in the CS degree, they were already self-trained, not only on C++, but I forget, what was the name of the Windows graphics system back then? Like, with all the goddamn handles and all of that crap.
Just GDI in user? GDI?
Maybe, I don't know. But all the cool kids already knew how to do all that. And I'm like, I don't. But function pointers are cool.
Uh, the old times. So people are going to regret asking us questions if we answer the actual question. This is what we do. Like, this is the tangent podcast. We answer the actual question in like seconds and then find adjacent things to talk about for the next 35 minutes.
I'm sorry. Are we no longer the A-B testing podcast?
No. We are who we are. It is totally fine. It was totally fine.
I was worried there for a second.
I'm going to, I don't know. I don't think I want to do the other mailbag. I think that's probably pretty good for today.
Yeah.
I hope you guys learned something. It's good to be back.
It is.
I can't believe it's 201. On the countdown to 202, you know, we'll one podcast at a time.
What's your prediction on when we will get to 202?
I'm going to say in a week or two. I can't remember what our schedule is. Are we up next week because we skipped a week? Or are we going back to every 2 weeks from today? That's a good question for you and I that none of our listeners care about, except for Jason said he gets mad. Like, Jason gets mad when he has to wait 2 weeks. Now he's pissed. My boss says he doesn't like when we have guests, so we have to do no guests every week. I can't do it.
Yeah, no.
Can't do it.
We should ask your boss on as a guest.
Why did you say that out loud? I'm not going to put that out. Yes. Leadership is disappointing people at a level they can absorb.
I'm wondering how far his no guest rule goes.
Oh, that would be – I'm going to tell you one work story about this because that would be a little bit of a – is that a paradox? Let me tell you the paradox where I have at work. There is another person named Alan Page who works where I work.
Really?
Yes. Works in a different department. And I feel bad because he's been there longer. But he gets way more of my email than I get of his.
I see.
And I think it's worse because – well, it got worse. Because for the first time ever, we both ended up in the same Slack channel. Because it turns out my team's helping his team build a thing. He's way far removed from my org. And then, so in that channel, someone tagged me when they meant to tag him. So I jumped in to re-tag other Alan. And then the paradox began. And the other Alan pointed out that if we converse too much in Slack, we both cease to exist. So we're very careful about it. There is a paradox there. The same with, I don't know what to do. We live in a world of paradox.
It seems like he should probably go by his middle name from here on out.
Well, I could go by my middle. Oh, I already do.
You're right.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, we can do that. We can call it a day. I will not immediately, but in the next little while, edit this in 15 minutes or less and see what ends up for the public. This has been fun coming back, back to low key. There's no big milestones coming up. I don't think we have to do anything fun for 250 until 250. And that's like a long, long time from now. So back to low key podcasts. And we'll figure out as we go.
Did I answer, by the way? We are doing this next week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. I can do that, man. I'm in.
Cool.
All right. That's all I got, man. I'm Alan.
I'm Brent.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.